Alrighty folks, and welcome to the Chronicle Podcast channel. Episode 20, The Fall of the Qin Dynasty. So we're finally here, finally made it to episode 20. And on the 20th episode, it's probably a good time to end it with the end of the Qin Dynasty. So that's quite nice. This episode is actually kind of inspired by a TV show that is called The King's War. And you could find it on Netflix, by the way. It's all in Chinese, but there's English subtitles. And it goes from basically like the end of the Qin Dynasty, and then it talks about the Chu Han contention between Liu Bang and Xiang Yu. But that will be next week's episode. So, in today's episode, we'll be looking at the fall of the Qin Dynasty. Now, pretty much, as you have guessed, when Qin Shi Huang died, his dynasty pretty much died with him. It only took, like, 3 years for the whole thing to fall apart and for the Han Dynasty to be established. So, I mean, something that was so, like, intricately engineered and that took such a huge effort just died in the space of 3 years. And that's pretty much all I could really say about it. Now, there were a lot of factors as to why it just suddenly collapsed, which is what we will be taking a look at into today. So the first is the legalist policies that Qin Shi Huang put into motion, the harsh laws and things like that. The next is his son, who gives all of his power to a eunuch by the name of Zhao Gao. These two factors led to rebellions which suddenly became more widespread, and eventually there will be two contenders for power after this, but more on that later. Now, like I mentioned, if you were living as a peasant, or even as part of the nobility to a certain degree, life wouldn't have been good for you in Qin China. These extremely harsh policies for even the littlest of crimes would have made life unbearable. Not only that, but the overwhelming presence of the state bearing down on you and watching your every move must have made people live in constant fear of the patrols which were always around, as well as even their neighbours. It was encouraged to tell the guards of any of your neighbours' misdeeds so they could be punished. So you could get on with everyone just from fear and fear alone, rather than the fact that, you know, you actually like the person. As well as that, people were forced into labour projects, which were pretty much a death sentence, and it is clear to see why many people were extremely unhappy. Furthermore, the traditions that your family once followed for generations were also outlawed. For example, if you were a Taoist and you simply wanted to go with the flow, it was now forbidden. This actually had huge problems for the Qin Dynasty, as many of the emperor's new subjects couldn't really get with the program, if you know what I mean. For example, the former state of Chu were pretty heavy into Taoist traditions, and now it was just to be taken away? Well, it was safe to say that this feeling of hatred against Qin was boiling under the surface. But all that was keeping it together was the sheer power that Qin Shi Huang projected onto the empire. Even in modern-day Shandong province, where Kunzi, or Confucius, came from, would have practiced Confucian ideals. But now, these ideals were outlawed. Qin Shi Huang made sure that everyone got the message by burning those books publicly and then burying the scholars alive who failed to give them to the government. You could argue that this state of tension between the populace and the regime was like a powder keg waiting to explode, and that explosion happened as soon as Qin Shi Huang popped his clogs and died. This brings me on to the second part of this podcast, which will be the larger part. The first emperor's successor and his confidant in power, the eunuch Zhao Gao. But first, we need to go to the story of when Qin Shi Huang actually died. By the time he had died, he was on the road with his usual entourage, his right-hand man Li Si, and his head of palace eunuchs, Zhao Gao. But the other most important character to be on this trip was Qin Shi Huang's 18th and youngest son, Hu Hai. Now, Hu Hai is the one who actually becomes Qin's second emperor. However, he wasn't supposed to be. The man who was supposed to be the second emperor was stationed up at the Great Wall with one of Qin's most famous generals, Meng Tian. His name was Fuzhou, but a series of events occurred which stopped him from becoming the emperor. What happened, supposedly, was that Meng Tian was very good friends with the current Crown Prince, and it was a safe bet that he would become the new emperor's right-hand man once word of the emperor's death came about. If Meng Tian and Fuzhou got to power, Zhao Gao knew his days would be numbered. So here was the problem. Neither of them were around when the emperor died. And it just so happened that Li Si and Zhao Gao didn't particularly get along with Meng Tian, so Zhao Gao proposed a scheme in which to stop Fuzhou from becoming emperor. The scheme was rather simple. Basically, stop him from becoming emperor. But here's the details. So now, as Qin Shi Huang was laying there, dying on his bed, in Da Ping Tai village, 100 kilometers away from Xiangyang, he sent an urgent letter to summon Fuzhou to Xiangyang for the funeral. But of course, he gave the letter to Li Si and Zhao Gao to deliver, which of course they didn't do. Instead, Zhao Gao managed to convince Li Si to forge the emperor's signature, and rather than summoning Fuzhou and Meng Tian to the funeral, they received orders to commit suicide in order to join the emperor in the afterlife. Which, surprisingly, they actually did. Whilst the two were reading their letters, the royal entourage was making its way to Xiangyang to bury the emperor and to cover up the stench of the emperor's rotten corpse. Now just remember, nobody knows that the emperor's dead yet. And it is said that Li Si had rotten fish put in the carriages in front and behind the royal carriage carrying the emperor. And to carry on the charade even further, Zhao Gao even ordered the eunuchs who normally served the emperor's food to continue as normal and eat the food in the carriage beside the dead emperor's rotten corpse. Oh, that sounds disgusting. But regardless, the path was now open for Ho Hai to become the emperor, and that's exactly what happened. So the conspirators had managed to achieve their goals. Li Si would still be in his position as the prime minister under Ho Hai because he helped him get to power, and Zhao Gao would basically not get killed because he is now the top eunuch for the new emperor. And that's basically what happened when they got to Xiangyang, when the emperor was buried. They then announced, well, sorry, not when the emperor was buried, but when they got to Xiangyang, they announced that the emperor was dead, and the coup d'etat, as so to speak, was complete. Now, like I said, after the emperor died, the dynasty only lasted 3 years later, and those 3 years were rife with constant rebellions and famine, because nobody was farming, due to the fact that everyone was rebelling and fighting. So, you know, this centuries-long project that was in the making, all these pieces which had finally fallen into place for Qin, and then within 39 months, it all died. But the only good news, I guess, is that it does pave the way for future dynasties. That's the thing about the Qin dynasty. They may have only been around for 15 years, but man, they made a huge impact on Chinese culture, society, and history. Every single dynasty that follows something that the Qin dynasty established. So they could pat themselves on the back for that. Or, I should say, Qin Shi Huang could. So with that conspiracy and politicking out of the road, which resulted in the new emperor being crowned, to which he called himself Qin Arshu, and boy, were the good times a-coming. Nah, I'm just kidding. He was a spoiled, arrogant, pleasure-seeking simpleton who had no experience in running his own bath, never mind an empire. He was the perfect emperor for Zhao Gao to manipulate, and that's how it went. Qin Arshu was happy to have all of his concubines in one night, party all the time, and let Zhao Gao run the empire for him. The only time Qin Arshu was in court was to hear good news about everyone being so happy and how he had the mandate of heaven. If anyone sent any news like there's a rebellion, there's a food shortage, or there was a natural disaster, the emperor would execute them and their entire families. It's safe to say that the emperor only liked yes men. However, as time progressed, Zhao Gao managed to convince the emperor to not even bother going into court, and he could dominate processions. The deal was that the emperor would try to find the key to immortality and complete his father's work, whilst Zhao Gao would hand him any news of importance. Now, of course, Zhao Gao knew that the emperor only liked yes men, so he withheld all the bad news and kept telling the emperor that it was all sunshine and roses. Now, there is a story about Zhao Gao, which kind of emphasises how much control he had over the Qin court. So the story goes that he summoned the emperor into the court for this charade, and what happened was that Zhao Gao was presented a gift of this mighty horse, which was given to the emperor of Qin from the Xiongnu tribes to the north, thus demonstrating Qin power and how he had the mandate of heaven, blah de blah de blah. However, it wasn't actually a horse that was brought into the court, but it was in fact a deer. Now, Zhao Gao really wanted to exercise his power over the ministers and basically said, "This is a horse. Does anyone challenge this statement?" All of the members of the court knew fine well it was a deer, but they knew if they disagreed, they would soon lose their positions. they would soon lose their heads. So everyone, apart from two men in the court, said that the deer was a horse. This story is called Zhilu Wei Ma, and it is still told in China today. But I mean, just the story, it just goes to show how much power Zhao Gao wielded in the name of the emperor. Now, of course, with an incompetent ruler in charge of a society that has strict adherence to laws, you just know that it was a disaster waiting to happen, and the dynasty's days were numbered. Things got so bad that even Li Si, who initially helped the young emperor get to power, tried to see him, but Zhao Gao refused to let it happen. The tension between the two men got so bad that eventually Li Si was killed for treason, under some trumped up charges engineered by Zhao Gao, of course, and the once great advisor was given the five pains, or Wu Xin. This type of execution involved a tattoo in the face, nose cut off, feet cut off, the privates cut off, and then finally being cut in half in the waist. But of course, before this, he had to go through just a wee bit of torture as well. And the thing is, it was only Qin Shi Huang who held all of this together, but now he was gone, and it was as if all of these conquered states were all itching to rise up and spit in the faces of the dynasty which was in charge. The timing couldn't be better. A eunuch was terrorising the imperial court, the emperor was an imbecile, a bunch of ambitious men were all trying to exploit the situation, and the fear that the first emperor inspired was now gone. It was clear to all that something was going to happen, and indeed it did. There is a story about a couple of soldiers in 209 BC named Chengsheng, or Chengshu, whichever way you want to call them, as well as Wu Guan. And these two soldiers, they were in the Qin army, and they were in the process of escorting a unit to a small town to defend. But they had been slowed down due to bad weather and would miss their deadline. Now, if you were late, you were dead, according to Qin law. So the two put their heads together and said, "Well, to hell with this," and rose up in rebellion. It didn't achieve a huge overthrow of the Qin government or anything, but it did set into motion events that the Qin dynasty simply couldn't withstand. These motions was that a small spark turned into an inferno, as many people ran to join the cause, and before you know it, they were campaigning in the name of the state of Chu, and then a new king of Chu was installed, declaring independence from Qin. And soon after that, all the other states pretty much do the same. This uprising, like I said, quickly died out, but before anyone could react, several more uprisings were springing up everywhere, and more people were declaring independence. It was becoming a free-for-all out there, and the Qin emperor didn't even know about it. And, like I said, he only wanted to hear the good news. He didn't even know that the Empire was crumbling in his watch, or lack of watch, so to speak. But finally, once he actually sees what is happening, it was far too late. He realised that Zhao Gao had really usurped power and induced this reign of terror on the Qin court, thus paralysing it. However, before he could do anything about it, Zhao Gao, obviously being more politically savvy than the young emperor, had him done in before he could do any damage. The next and last Qin emperor lasted only 46 days before he allowed himself to be demoted to merely a king rather than an emperor, and from there he disappeared from history. But at least in those 46 days he did do one positive thing. He had Zhao Gao executed, and then stepped down to the forces of Liu Bang, one of the main men in Chinese history, and one of the main men in the story that will be there next week, as he is the one who faces down the mighty and powerful Xiang Yu, and this would later be called the True Han Contention. Now, I do need to mention this. The Qin Empire didn't resign with that much of a whimper. They did go out with a bit of a bang, and this is emphasised at the Battle of Zhulu, or Zhulu Zhejiang, if you want to say it in the Chinese way. This was a real David and Goliath situation, where Xiang Yu was up against a powerful Qin general by the name of Zhang Han. Xiang Yu only had 200,000 to 300,000 troops under his command, whereas the Qin army had anywhere between 300,000 to 500,000 troops. The battle resulted in an absolute victory for Xiang Yu, which surprised everyone, and around 200,000 Qin troops were captured by Xiang Yu. Now the thing is, Xiang Yu didn't really know what to do with them because he couldn't really feed his own army, never mind this swell of 200,000 Qin soldiers that he just captured. So he came to the conclusion that he had to do them in. And what he did was he then said, "We're going to bury them all alive," and that's exactly what happened. That's worse than burying, what, 190 scholars alive? He burned the buried 200,000 men alive. That's brutal. But anyway, we're going to talk about that next week because this is some of the things that Xiang Yu does, which then Liu Bang like uses to harbour support for him, and it goes back and forward between the two. And yeah, there's things like this that help Liu Bang win. But we'll get to that next week. And that's pretty much it, by the way. So to sum this up, the Qin dynasty pretty much died out just because they were extremely harsh in terms of their legalist policies, and you know, people had to do 12 years of really hard manual labour, and you know, there was not really a reward later. You would just like be rewarded with your life. And what was your life? You would just go back to farming, you know, like there was no reward for anything good that people did unless it was in the army. And as well as that, the man who created the dynasty, the one who put everything into motion, who consolidated his power, Qin Shi Huang, he died, and then all of the fears of the Qin just died with him, especially when his incompetent son takes over and Zhao Gao is really usurping power and everyone can see what's going on, how corrupt it is, and all of these things just lead to this mass rebellion. And then we have what will be discussed next week, that is the True Han Contention. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope that wherever you are, I hope you're safe, and I hope you're doing well. Take care of everyone. Bye for now, and thanks for listening.